welcome to Playwright, a podcast about creating and sharing new ways to play. My name is Ryan Heyman. You can call me H.
And I'm Ryan Quintel. You can call me Q.
Q, how often do you go for DLC in games?
You know, I was, for a while there, I was kind of not anti-DLC, but just like religiously like, no, when I'm done with the game, I usually put it down unless it's one of these kind of chill, relaxing forever games I can get lost in. And I'm not a huge DLC player, but anytime I do engage with DLC, I'm like, oh yeah, there's a lot to like about this kind of original work. Why? What are you about to recommend me? Because I'm excited.
I mean, nothing in particular. Just kind of, I was reflecting upon, you know, we're in the middle of a Steam sale as of the time of recording.
And oh, yes.
So I like to kind of venture through my wish list and see if any of the things that I've got listed in there have significant discounts. And I was just recognizing like how much fighting game DLC I have like on the wish list, and was like, you know what, I, you know, for most genres, I don't usually, you know, go for the extra, you know, this and that that comes with every game unless I am like really, you know, getting into it. But for fighting games, I think there's something about seeing those like grayed out faces on the roster that just makes it feel like you have an incomplete product. I'm such a sucker for fighting game DLC.
I think, you know, you mentioned that, and I do have a weakness for fighting game DLC, even though I don't really like Mortal Kombat. I get the latest DLC. Luckily, that was story DLC, so that was like the best money I ever spent on DLC. But yeah, even with Smash Brothers, you and I are friends on Switch. You know how many hours I have in Smash Brothers, and yet I have the stupid fighter pass for that thing, and I don't know why, but it gives me good warm feelings to own it. What I should do is do the thing that any budget conscious or sensible person will do, which is buy the game a year after it's out, get the version with all the DLC bundled in. But I just never seem to get around to that.
Yeah, that's the thing. They aren't doing it as much anymore, but it used to be like Capcom releases, like you would just wait 6 months and get so much more than you would have got on day one. Like Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3, which added a significant amount of content, came out the same year as Marvel vs. Capcom 3. And like, what a kind of slap in the face to players who had bought it on day one, you know?
Yeah, God. And at the same time, though, it's like, you don't want them to not put out that package. I guess it's a delicate balance, right? Yeah. Wait until the perfect time so that you won't upset me.
But I've been playing a bit of Dragon Ball FighterZ, and man, just kind of like loading that up without, you know, I think I have the version that came with like FighterZ Pass 1, but now there's like FighterZ Pass 2 and 3 as well. Like, even though my roster is expanded and there are quite a few fighters in there and I know the names of maybe two of them, like I'm not a Dragon Ball fan at all, but like still just seeing all of those like gray spaces where a character should be, it's just kind of like, it reminds you in a way that not a lot of other games do, that you don't have the complete experience.
It's actually it's funny you say that, because it's one of the reasons why when I attempt to play something like League of Legends, like for all the sort of mechanical intricacies of that game that we don't have to get into, but the general premise of I have to unlock or play tens of hundreds of hours to get all these characters in a way that I do appreciate, like Dota just being like all the characters are the characters, you can buy skins and all this sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I wish there was a different way to monetize other than rolling out rosters of characters, because it also kind of changes the game. So when you come back to it after a period of time, you don't really have your wits about you. If you were good with a character, you might find yourself with a hard counter.
I also feel like fighting game DLC is some of the most like honest DLC out there. You know, if you pick up a Assassin's Creed expansion pack, then you know, your enjoyment of it is really going to be like mediated by how interesting the story element is or how fun the missions are. And it's all like a big unknown, or especially like the thing that like Ubisoft does this a lot, where they will be like, if you buy on PlayStation 4, you get this special mission. And it's like, how much work do you think they put into a platform pre-order bonus mission? Like, you know, I don't know if I want to miss it, but you know, on the off chance that it's great, but like, honestly, on the grand scheme of things, what are the odds? But DLC as a concept feels kind of nebulous most of the time. Whereas with fighting games, I feel like the real joy in fighting games
is getting
comes from like figuring out and just controlling and moving as a different character. And so, you know, if they say like, here it is, you know, $3, $7 for a character, you know exactly what you're getting and you can make a very, you know, conscious decision whether or not, whether or not that's worth it to you. So I have to at least applaud them on that.
Yeah. And with the, I guess there's a rumor mill going around where WB is looking to sell off a bunch of assets and potentially have a studio pick up NetherRealm or a publisher pick up NetherRealm Studios. We might see fighting game DLC if it ends up with an Activision or an EA taken to a really extreme level.
That's true. Not that WB has really been a harbinger of ethical good content in the past, but yeah, I think they're the Shadow of War publisher, right? Or was that somebody else?
They're Shadow of War. Yeah, they have, I guess,
That was pretty notorious.
Anyways.
Let's get to some video game pitches. I think that you are going first today.
Ah, okay. Well, today I have for you kind of an Assassin's Creed meets, or just the sailing part of Assassin's Creed meets Monster Hunter meets a fishing game. So what I'm pitching is a game where you go around, you have maybe a small boat or even a canoe, just a man-made little thing, and you're going around this crazy world. Maybe it's post-apocalyptic, make the setting some, but way post-apocalyptic, and there's all sorts of crazy fish creatures that you can catch, and the general loop is that you're catching these fish and using their parts to build yourself better lures, better bait, and of course a bigger and more complicated boat to take you further out into the ocean, finding bigger and bigger fish until you know, in the end game, you're whale hunting, radioactive whale hunting.
All right, starting the clock. Yeah, so, you know, I think back to Assassin's Creed 4, which included whale hunting as well. I think you would kind of like set out on a little rowboat apart from your main ship, throw harpoons, and then I think it was like a matter of kind of like holding on to the rope and wearing the whale down or something like that. I know also there was a pretty famous Resident Evil 4, I think, boss that was like a big fish that attacked you from the water. You kind of like fish it out and fight it. That was later ported to Final Fantasy 15. Weird crossover, but yeah.
Oh my God.
I like the idea. And this idea of taking fishing, which I think it's very popular in video games, but like, I mean, people have raised the stakes in the past, but like, I still feel like there's room to explore there. So I'm happy that we're doing this.
Yeah. One of the things that I think is like necessary in a way, I do like the idea of making it a little bit more, I hate to use the term Fortnite, but almost friendlyifying the aesthetic. And so the fish that you catch can be really outlandish and almost cartoony looking, but you still get all sorts of interesting parts from them. And I think like maybe if you want to do some layer of having your little harbor that you go back to and sell fish and convert them and manufacture things from them, that would be kind of fun.
I mean, Monster Hunter, I feel like, is a pretty good like balance between realism and cartooniness. Like, those characters are bright and colorful and they have weird bits sticking off in every direction. And sometimes they're a giant, you know, rotund bat that's filled with poison. And sometimes, you know, it's like crazy, ludicrous Adventure Time designs, but kind of set in a world that feels realistic and that feels really high stakes. I've always appreciated that balance.
I like the aesthetic of Monster Hunter. I just wish that it was, I don't know if it had a more artificial quality to its lighting. Sometimes some of the Monster Hunter settings feel very like just washed in sun. And I do like the idea of pushing the color palette a little bit more vibrant or contrasty or what have you. But I'm thinking about like what, obviously you could go progression of like size of fish and size class of fish and kind of Monster Hunter-y style, but what other sort of things I'm thinking about, like having as a player to make the choice of like, am I going to use this fish that I caught, or maybe eventually you unlock nets and you can like farm whole schools of fish that were in the early game. You know, the trade-off of like, can you use this fish as bait for a larger fish, or should you use it as like an upgrade for your equipment?
Yeah, I wonder if there are even some ways that we can add some kind of decisions and finesse to the reeling in of the fish, you know, instead of it being such like a binary thing. If there are ways to anger the fish in such a way that it kind of transforms, or, you know, sets off a poisonous residue from its gills, or as like a defense mechanism, or even like in Pokemon Snap, you would have to kind of trick the Magikarp into going into a waterfall to transform into a Gyarados if you wanted a picture of the Gyarados, and you know, that kind of thing, where it's like there's some level of like of the secrets that you can unlock if you fish for these creatures in a particular way.
I'm thinking about like all the mechanics there are of fishing. There's a show that I've watched in the past called Wicked Tuna on National Geographic. No. Are you familiar with this show?
It's quite a name though.
Wicked Tuna, dude. It's there. Obviously it's coming out of Gloucester near my hometown. And the fishermen, they have they're obviously tuna fishing, and they have to constantly like chum the water in order to just end up attracting these tuna fish in the area. So I wonder if there's also like something even more aggressive than a hunger meter of you always, whether or not you're catching the fish that you want to catch, you always want to be catching like smaller fish so you can just be chopping them up and like feeding it into the water.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's like a shot clock for fishing.
It's kind of one of the things that I was curious about in Animal Crossing. Like, now that we're starting to get sharks coming to the island, it's like, I see this little fish kind of swimming off the coast. It would be kind of fun if I just kind of leave it there, or, you know, if I could attract more fish by using the bait, and if that would make sharks more likely to appear or something like that.
Yeah. Something that like, even if you're not catching the fish that you want to catch, because I do think like it'd be interesting. I don't exactly want to go full hunting simulator on this, but fishing is waiting in a lot of senses. But also they have some tech on that tuna boat that allows them to get this sort of sonar of what is under them, and they just get very rough outlines, almost like a heat map of potential fish. So you can kind of see or guess the size class of a fish. And I do like the idea of you being able to kind of learn where certain fish show up by their size class, and maybe even deploy things like buoys on the water so that you map the ocean yourself.
Yeah, because in Animal Crossing, you can kind of get a sense of like the size of the fish that you're aiming for at the time. Yeah, so what other kind of technology, you know, this would be kind of fun to, it's another thing that you mentioned, like, I don't want any fish to come across as useless. To go back to, again, Animal Crossing, like, everybody hates reeling in a sea bass.
Yeah.
It just feels like the most, like, you can't sell it for much money. It's taking up space in your inventory. It's making your fishing rod that much closer to breaking. It looked like a big fish when you were casting into the water, and so there's that disappointment as well. It's just like a all around bad experience. But I
actually, you know, just got PTSD and wanted to respond to that. It's easily a C+.
Yeah, exactly. But if each of those could be kind of like an incremental, like something that, you know, kind of like in RPGs that let you like grind down unneeded weapons for raw materials that you can use to upgrade the weapons you actually want, you know, something that, so like chumming the water or using them to create bait that you can use to reel in the bigger fish, like that is more interesting than just being disappointed with a bad catch and having to throw it back.
Yeah, and the way that the sort of tuna boat sits up is like not even the traditional. I think people, like fishing games up until this point, have largely been you hold the fishing pole, and there's some level to that. But once you get into larger fish, and in this case, they've got maybe a 4 or 5 person boat, and they're catching tuna fish, which are about 1,000 pounds of fish. When they're on the bigger side, they just set out these really sturdy rods and hang them off the side of the boat. They end up hanging 4 or 5 of them, and they just wait until they hear one zzz and start spinning. And then there's the act of making sure that the fish is actually hooked. And then one person is actually fishing and the other person is maneuvering the boat in order to make sure that the tension is never so much that the line will snap or it'll rip itself out of the fish. So I wonder if there's eventually a co-op aspect of this, or there's some like mechanic where you it's more about controlling the boat and keeping the boat up with these sort of auto fishers happening for you.
I think one question left before we run out of time here. I used to play the Street Pass games on 3DS quite a bit, and they added a fishing one down the line as well. And there were kind of legendary fish in there, bigger fish that you couldn't catch with one, you know, kind of throw of the rod. You would have to kind of hook them, reel them in as much as possible. They would always escape, but then next time you found them, like their stamina meter would kind of remain where it was when you last encountered them. Is this something that you want to carry forward? Because I think there's kind of an interesting, like Moby Dick type of feeling to, almost like a nemesis system where you recognize a fish and you can kind of, you can kind of damage it by throwing harpoons and by, you know, doing things that will be more of like a long-term, if you ever cross paths again, maybe it'll even learn to avoid certain type of lures in the future. But at the same time, like I imagine there's a certain kind of level of like unrealisticness to like a fish wouldn't remain tired for very long. Like it would probably just, you know, take a little fish nap or something. They always talk about how people sleep with the fishes. So I'd imagine that fishes
very sleepy.
Famously must sleep very well.
I like that. And I think one thing that you could do is if you have some sort of way to tag and identify like one fish per size glass or something is your nemesis, then you almost get the effect of, and you can like scar them and things, you almost create your own jaws that when you catch the shark, it's got the, you know, one eye missing and it's all a scar tissue on its nose and all that kind of wild stuff.
Yeah. I like it. Let's close it down. Let's give it a name. So, you know, like, what do I know about fishing? There's the term Fishers of Men from Jesus.
Fishers of Men.
I'm trying to think of like any other, where there's like the fisherman, it's like some short story or something, right? About fishermen. I'm sure there's hundreds.
There's of course the Moby Dick angle too. I wonder if there's like,
let's not do Moby Dick angle.
The Moby Dick angle will keep off the ground. How about something like the big one? Or is there something like, how do people talk about like catching a large fish or something like that?
A big fish story.
Big fish story.
There's always a bigger fish.
There's always a bigger
Star
fish.
Star Wars.
You're gonna need a bigger boat. All of these are not bad.
Putting out a straight-faced game and using a Qui-Gon Jinn, like unquoted quote, would be a hilarious power move.
Well, hey, this is Playwright, and we're here to have fun. Damn it! So there's always a bigger fish. I watched episode one the other day, so it resonates really well.
Wow, I'm sure not many people can say that. How did it hold up?
It's not great, but it's not as bad as the internet has come to automatically file it.
I think there's plenty to like in it. There's a lot of like nice things to look at along the way.
Yeah, I think there's some of the stuff is kind of questionable. I think I think it might have been Red Letter Media that made the thesis that Qui-Gon Jinn and Obi-Wan Kenobi should have been one character called Obi-Wan Kenobi, and which I think is a good idea to help tighten up that script a little bit. But
yeah, but I mean, we can at least all agree that Jar Jar was great.
Yes.
So funny.
And the anchor of the film, really.
Yeah, I mean, I could just watch him step and poop all day long.
Icky poo.
Deserved his own movie. All right, my pitch for the day.
What a segue.
I'm curious if we could bring battling tops somehow into video games. How do we do this? So I don't have much beyond that other than, I don't know if this would just feel like the bad kind of randomness, but like, what could we do to make battling tops a fun video game experience?
That's great. I used to, when I was a kid, have some battle tops, I think they were called at the time. And I remember very much like they're always being impressed if somebody had like a very nice launcher. Do you remember that?
So I had a pretty like, I'm not a fancy set, like little tiny plastic things. You would wrap a string around them and then pull a little pull at the end and they would go spinning. I know there were some with had like kind of automatic handheld launchers that looked like those Star Trek communicators, but not for my family.
Oh yeah, that the Star Trek communicator was the launcher of envy for sure. I'm wondering if there's, in the same way that I played the 51 Clubhouse games, 551 games in one or whatever it's called, I wonder if there is room for a, not 51, but like games only 90s kids would know in a sense, and like add the battle tops along with Pogs. Mm-hmm. And maybe some, what else did we have? I played some Magic the Gathering back in the day. I've actually been reacquainting myself with Magic lately.
Yeah, it's still pretty popular.
I'm thinking about like in Battletops, let's take it to a Rocket League like place.
Mm-hmm.
Now we could do different arenas. Obviously, the design of the arena can come into effect. Looking at the stuff that like Gel's Marble Run has done, you could do different types of events with the top. They don't just have to battle, right? There could be, you know, just your basic who lasts the longest with spinning. There could be the like a competition where you're kind of circling around a course and you're actually seeing which top can make it to as far as possible on the course or last the longest in the course.
If we could take some inspiration from like Joust and Balloon Fight in a way, I like, you know, those games are pretty tactical in a way. Like you always want to find a way to like hurt your opponent by landing on top of them or by hitting kind of the upper portion of their sprite. And so you always have to find ways to kind of like lure them downwards because they both want to be above each other. And so if you can find a way to like lure them into, you know, thinking that you're going to be dropping to pick up an item or something like that, then kind of take advantage of them when they are kind of dropping down for the attack, you know, a standard kind of like, you know, punish on a failed attack. We could do something kind of similar in a 3D perspective by having like a lot of little hills and mounds across the field. Like whoever's coming down from a hill is going to have that speed advantage and it's going to have the advantage in like striking velocity and direction. And then eventually, you know, maybe every time you get hit, yeah, your top kind of loses some of its speed. And eventually you kind of putter out.
That's cool. And I like the idea of, speaking of games for 90s kids, do you remember Crossfire?
Yeah, well, I remember the commercial.
You get caught up in the...
Yep.
So the Crossfire is actually, at least from my memory, unless I was playing it wrong, a really terrible game. Because it just is like everybody has 50 more like mini little ball bearings and you shoot them and... then I guess the game is over. It was just the satisfaction of launching 50 ball bearings at somebody else.
Sounds like a pretty good game to me.
Yeah, I guess so, right? But they just go into a pit. They don't hit anything. But I was thinking that, like, I like the idea of maybe you play, like, a first-person shooter or a third-person shooter or something where you you actually have... like little ball bearings that you can launch at your top and you have to clip it on the perfect side to keep its spin momentum going. So you're constantly having to like feed the top in order to keep its speed up.
Yeah. Or like if there are, you know, boost pads or something that can kind of reinvigorate, give your, give this battling top some more energy. You know, again, like wanting to kind of lure people into taking risks and keeping the flow of battle going.
Yeah, so if we're in loose control of the top, like we can move it around, but it's obviously got crazy physics and momentum. I do like the idea of like trying to find little, like instead of treating them like an F-Zero or a Mario Kart boost, almost like little notches in the ground that you can wedge yourself into to get additional momentum. It kind of launches you back out. And then like that becomes also a battleground that multiple players will fight to earn, right? So you could lose your momentum in a battle to get to the momentum builder.
See, from a physics perspective, I would think if you kind of lock yourself into a charger on the ground, then you would become more resistant to attacks from the outside, whereas something like an F-Zero Charger, like that looks visually like a slick surface. I can see somebody...
Yeah.
I could see that being a more dangerous space than something that you would like really lock into.
I do like the idea of these things feeling more like, instead of arenas, potentially like mini golf courses in a way, where it's a lot more obstacles, a lot more.
Yeah, yeah.
Almost I would almost describe it as like the feeling of, there's this one Mario Kart map, I think, that is just like multiple levels in a really tight gray enclosed sort of blocky fort in the latest Mario Kart that I'm...
Like one of... Okay. Not one of the N64 battle courses.
I do like Block Fort and four color Block Fort or whatever it was called. Color Fort in Mario Kart 64. Yeah, something on that level where there's like some multiple distinct levels, but there's also like precarious bridges and stuff to travel along. That could be fun. Like getting bumped off a bridge could be catastrophic. You could almost treat controlling the top a combination of just like momentum and also like almost like a Tony Hawk manual, right? Where you have to constantly left, right balance.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's an interesting direction to add to this. Maybe it's a left stick controls movement and right stick controls the balance. And so you always have to kind of like dual stick your way around. And maybe you can make riskier moves if you kind of counter lean in the other direction, like cutting a corner in F-Zero where you have to kind of throw on the opposite thruster to make those really tight turns and get that extra speed.
It's like the way you see like a really daring motorcyclist like almost touch the ground with their knee or something as they lean into a turn. That's interesting. And so then like, then if you have some balance effect and that's something you have more control over, then if you fall down from one of the higher places, you almost get like after touch in the air, if you will, where like you have to land almost like a skating game, right? Right on your correct axis or else you're really going to just spin out and maybe even torpedo someone else. I do like the idea of wrecking in this, really flinging your top all over the place.
So every good kind of standalone battle game like this needs additional modes that you can play. What other kinds of like, kind of like how Rocket League has the like basketball mode and stuff like that. Like what other kind of fun things could we do with this basic format?
I mean, I like the race aspect. Is there like a tribute you could do to Balloon Fight somehow? Could you do like a low gravity top thing?
Like a three dimensional. That'd be interesting. Yeah. Or like even a map with just like a ton of jumps in it where you have to kind of hit each other in the air. That would be very difficult. And I don't know how you'd even determine who ended up coming out the winner in any clash.
I'm almost thinking about the way that like Super Monkey Ball was super well built around like, here's other things that you could do with balls, whether it was bowling or I think not boxing, but baseball was in there, that sort of stuff. So I wonder what kind of things we can do with tops. I like mini games where potentially you are like going around and like planting flowers in a garden and you're rated on your coverage and you have to go up and down the rows, spreading the seeds all over the place, that kind of stuff.
That's all the time we have there. Let's give it a name.
Well, top of the world is obvious.
Let's see if I like that top and topples are both, they sound similar and they have meanings that kind of feed into each other well here. Topple the top.
I mean, topple tops is not bad. It's like tabletop or something. Topple the morning. Oh God.
Topple tops is pretty fun though. I like that. Let's go with that. And let's see if there's anything from our community today. There very well might not be.
All right. Today's listener pitch comes from Mary Dina with the subject line of this email: 5 things Tiger King can teach you about writing a show. Okay. It says, "Hi there. I hope you're safe and healthy during these uncertain times." That's awfully nice. Last week, Tony Award-winning producer Ken Davenport wrote a blog post making connections to writing and Netflix's hit docuseries, Tiger King. And as a podcaster with a focus on writing, I thought you would enjoy this. That's what we do here. Here's 5 things Tiger King can teach you about writing a show. Best, Mary. This is Mary Dina, manager of events and partnerships at Davenport Theatrical Enterprises.
Okay.
Wow.
Wow. Sounds like we've got a real, real fan.
Yeah. I mean, they know that we are a podcast with a focus on writing.
Which, I mean, you know, with the name like Playwright, I don't blame them for that, but that's okay. That's all right. Let's take this. Let's give it a go and see if we can make a video game out of this email. I know there's kind of a trend that a lot of businesses, you know, they'll write white papers and articles and stuff like that, trying to build their credibility, boost their SEO, newsletter subscriptions, stuff like that. You know, just as a way of kind of like boosting their visibility within the B2B space a lot of the time. So you have to do whatever you can to try to like catch people's eyes. Totally understand that. It always does come across as like a little cringy to see stuff like, you know, what can Game of Thrones teach you about marketing, you know, refrigeration repair supplies. And it's like, okay, I see what you're trying to do. Like, it's very pandery, but like, whatever. I know you have to do it. I know it's hard to stand out.
Hey, I myself have lobbied many times for the SEO t-shirt or the SEO game title, rather, mm-hmm. on this show.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like we, I don't think we're getting a lot of search engine traffic anyway, so we do it as a kind of a tongue-in-cheek gag.
Yeah, but, of course.
Anyways, so what are we about to work with here? So what Tiger King can teach about just writing in general?
Just writing a show.
Writing a show. All
so
right.
let me start with this. Have either of us seen Tiger King?
I have. Yeah, I watched that.
Okay. Okay. I have not seen Tiger King, so this will be a very interesting exploration for me.
You know what I've been playing over the last week or so is Planet Zoo, and we have our own little kind of cage with tigers in it as well. I mean, it's a big you know, space where they can walk around and be happy and get in a lot of fights. Apparently, the balance of genders is not well considered. I'm no zoologist. I just play one in a video game. But I think it would be interesting to have to, you know, come up or like play kind of like a strategy simulation type of game of filming a reality show, staging all of the, you know, like whatever the purpose is. Maybe you are assigned a purpose. Maybe you come up with one. You know, maybe you're assigned kind of like the standard suite of like reality show. Like, you know, you have to pretend like you run a pawn shop, or you have to, you know, look for evidence that Hitler might still be alive, or you have to, you know, try to interview people that have seen aliens and stuff like that. And so, you know, maybe you have this kind of small town to work with and everyone is just kind of like an actor putting on a part.
One of the things I remember hearing about is there's some controversy as to whether or not a particular character on the show, some woman, I believe, killed her husband or not.
Yeah, that's right. Carol Baskin got got one side of a story told on Tiger King that upon further reading seems less credible the more you kind of look into it. But I think the show kind of definitely tried to frame her as being a potential husband murderer.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, we got a little bit of this with Robert Durst and the Jinx, too. And one thing I do like, and I think we've played with this concept before on the show, is going out and being some sort of documentary crew. Maybe this is in this town that you kind of outlined before, and gathering footage and trying to, you know, find the right mix of folly, music track, and you know, color grading to cast people as the heroes and villains in complete stories.
Or maybe this is like a, what do they call it? Like an archive documentary? Is that what it's called? Something like, I'm thinking
where
like,
they just show clips. Like there's,
yeah, essentially stuff is already pre-recorded. So stuff like Grizzly Man, or, you know, where you're not going out and interviewing people yourself. You're just kind of showing clips of things that have happened and arranging the narrative yourself. And so, you know, maybe the game, almost like Her Story, where each clip and each portion of the clip could be kind of tagged invisibly in a way. And so, you know, the player can choose how to splice things together using the clips that they have. Maybe they're being requested to present certain characters in certain ways. And then just because like the clips are all intelligently tagged, you know, the game knows if you are presenting them in a favorable light or in a way that makes them, it tells this and that a story and what music cues you're pairing them with and, you know, doing the kind of like slow motion zoom in on them kind of sweating, you know, under a harsh question or something like that.
Yeah, my favorite thing is going back and I was actually floored to see, I don't know if you must have seen this, but Netflix has resurrected Unsolved Mysteries.
I saw the thumbnail on that.
Yeah, very jarring to realize after selecting that, oh, they have made a new Unsolved Mysteries, which is very interesting and strange in all sorts of ways. But and of course, they take the classic theme and do a creepy piano version of it, right? But one of the things that those types of television shows, especially lower budget stuff, used to do, and you still see employed on things like Dateline and stuff, is you really only have a very few set of photos to mm-hmm. work with. And so you're always trying to find new ways to pan and zoom on the same photo to keep it like interesting. And so I wonder if like if you are constructing a documentary or even a mockumentary, whatever, you get like real time Nielsen ratings of your little clips and almost like the camera in BioShock, the way that if you take pictures of a splicer over and over again, eventually they're not worth much. If you're trying to figure out how to maximize the engagement on every possible second of your documentary here.
I always love what they do when they try to kind of demonstrate like shock value. They'll say something shocking like, many experts believe that Bigfoot might have actually been a Nazi. And then they'll do like the inverted colors on the Bigfoot photograph and do like the slight camera tilting.
Yeah. So like if we get a, let's say the interface is maybe no more than Instagram level complicated, you know, you're kind of a light photo mode that you'd get in video games, but actually over these video clips or whatever, you almost get like a dreams for fake documentaries.
Yeah, that sounds kind of interesting. So it would be interesting to see like how people, like if this kind of catches on with the community, how people spin the same clips to mean different things. And it's really kind of a demonstration of how much sway, you know, documentary filmmakers have in post-production.
Yeah. I do like the idea too of, you know, we were just talking about DLC earlier. I do like the idea mm-hmm. of releasing like DLC of just like, you know, public domain, boring ass video clips. Maybe it could just be as simple as like a congressional hearing, but it's in the game now, and now you can put your color effects and snap cuts and all this stuff on it.
So what would be the kind of driving, you know, I could see objectives, you know, you can meet challenges along the way, but like what would be a kind of like long-term goal that you're working towards?
I wonder if you build a whole thing around like community challenges and the community like gets a challenge in a set time span of like every 30 days or something. They're like, take all the clips that exist in the database and create us a rock and roll band that broke up years ago but gets reunited documentary. Like make like these mm-hmm. really specific requests. I'm realizing right now that we're generating just like fake facts for the internet, which the internet does not need more of. But I do like the idea of like having these community goals and all you can do is upload one scene. Like you've probably seen those film projects where it's like many, many filmmakers, each of them doing a single scene.
We've run out of time there. Let's give it a name.
Well, the name of the company is Davenport Theatrical Enterprises. That is proud to be Davenport Theatrical Enterprises is proud to be an Inc. 5000 company.
I don't even know what that means.
I think that means it's in the top 5000 most valuable companies, according to Inc. magazine.
Seeing there has to be some sort of a spin on documentary or mockumentary that we can come up with.
Is there like a special name for somebody who makes a documentary? It's still just a
documentarian.
Documentarian. Davenport documentarians. I feel like this is about writing as well. Oh, docu-series is what they refer to as Tiger King. Maybe there's like a super docu something.
If there was a multiplayer aspect, this could be labeled a flockumentary.
Ooh, that's good. I was going to head towards like docu-royale or something like that. I like flockumentary.
Okay, kind of fun. Anyways, thank you very much for sending that one in. If you would like to submit a pitch of your own, which we would encourage you to do at this point, because we are out of
genuine pitches. Because we don't want to read spam emails anymore.
always happy to go through more of our spam, though. Then please do email us at playwrightcast@gmail.com. You can go to our website, playwrightcast.com/pitch, or you can tweet us your video game idea at playwrightcast.
Special thank you to Protodome for the use of our theme song, Hello World, off the album Blue Noise. And special thank you to thank you to the Kane and Rinse Podcast Network, where you can listen to great shows like Kane and Rinse, The Sausage Factory, and Playwright. Sound of Play.
We can listen to Playwright too. We encourage you to listen to us
as well. But I mean, poor Sound of Play. I'm mixing up all of our names.
Yeah, they'll get over it. All right, to take us out of the show today, I think that you are challenging me somehow.
Yes, we have a redacted game that I need you to guess. After redacted a sold-out concert in a redacted, war-torn country, redacted and the redacted are robbed of their redacted and paid in kind with a redacted, which is subsequently stolen by a local crime lord's gang. Oh no, you know it already, don't you?
Let's keep going now. Okay. I want to hear how this one is described.
Determined to collect his payment and enact revenge on the gangsters foolish enough to disrespect him, redacted sets out to redacted or die trying. Oh no, you're going to get it. I know it.
Yeah. So
it was too specific. Ugh.
No, I'm pretty confident because I, again, have recently watched the opening cutscene, which is pretty much the entire story that you've just read to me.
Oh no.
I wish there was a great line that the main character says. I wish I could pull it from my memory, but it's so funny. I would encourage people to go watch that opening cutscene.
Okay, so if people don't know it yet, let's draw it out a little bit. Here's a user review. Games are supposed to be, this is from Joseph F. Games are supposed to be fun, and this game delivers in spades. Explosions, check. Over-the-top story, check. Hilarious dialogue, check. Nearly nonstop action, check. Seems like a lot of folks just need to lighten up and remember that if something is entertaining, then it's worth its weight in crystal skulls.
Oh, that is a good review of the timeless 50 Cent Blood in the Sand.
Yeah, it's also scored as a very fair and balanced 10 by that person.
Good one.
Oh my gosh.
That's another one where I don't think it's backwards compatible, but I've always wanted to kind of go back to it. I've owned 50 Cent Bulletproof for the original Xbox for many years, and I've never gotten the chance to play that because that never came to 360 or Xbox One backwards compatibility. So still hoping that someday I'll get to play through Bulletproof.
I don't know if it's just because it was 50 Cent or what, but it stands out. This game stood out in my mind so clearly, even though it is nothing but mediocre across the board. User score 6.2, Metacritic score 71. Its awards are the number 72nd most discussed 360 game of 2009.
Wow, that's surprising.
Yeah, and 45th most shared Xbox 360 game of 2009. So it's just like, it's a big nothing burger, but yeah, 50 Cent Blood on the Sand. When I came across it, I was like, I have to. What gave it away? It was the sold-out concert, wasn't it? No.
I mean, sold-out concert in the war-torn country, like that's... I was thinking like, okay, is this Brutal Legend at the beginning? But that doesn't take place in a war-torn country at the beginning anyways.
It was... I redacted performing after performing a sold-out concert.
Mm-hmm.
I probably should have done it after performing a redacted.
Or sold-out redacted. I don't know. Yeah. Anyways, yeah. I still enjoy, you know, any little bit of that we can use to talk about 50 Cent and his illustrious video game career is all right by me.
Get rich or die trying.
Indeed. We'll catch you again next week.
Bye.